I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for women over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. ADHD, a hot topic in today's world and a buzzword surrounding today's society. Elaine Taylor Klaus, the founder and CEO of ImpactADHD.com, works with parents worldwide, online and on the phone, teaching them to raise confident, successful children with ADHD and all kinds of other complex challenges. A writer, public speaker, parenting educator, and coach, Elaine serves on the National Board of Directors of CHADD and as a parenting advisor for the American Academy of Pediatrics. She is a passionate advocate for conscious parenting as a way to help complex children reach their potential. She resides in Georgia with her family, so welcome, Elaine.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Let's start from the beginning. Tell me about your passion and your interest and your involvement in the subject of ADHD.
Well, I think like so many women of our generation, I fell into what I'm doing because my family needed something different or had things going on that needed my attention. And so, you know, going back now 25 years, I've been in this realm of trying to figure out what was going on with and how to support members of my family, starting first with my husband and then with each subsequent kid and eventually with myself, trying to sort of figure out what was happening that made it hard to hit the markers to be as successful in life or school or home or whatever it was that we knew we could be based on intelligence, but something was interfering. So from a very early time in my marriage and then having kids, I started exploring, trying to figure out what was happening. And in those days, it was long enough ago that while ADHD was an existing diagnosis, it wasn't really terribly well known. And it was even more, you know, sort of poo-pooed in those days than it is now, because there just wasn't a lot of information about it.
And how many years ago are we talking?
Probably about 25 years ago. So somewhere around, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. At that point, it was called ADHD, which stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. Although the name of this condition has actually changed many times over the years, or explanations of it have changed a lot. So it's shifted. And in the last 10 years, I would say, the amount of knowledge and science and information we have about the brain and brain development and ADHD has just expanded exponentially.
And is there a difference between ADHD and something like ADD? Are there other monikers for it?
So initially, it was ADHD and ADD were considered separate. ADD was attention deficit disorder. And then I believe it was in the DSM in the 90s that they were merged. And then it was decided to look at it in terms of ADHD inattentive type and ADHD hyperactive type and ADHD combined type. And so they're all ADHD, but for many, many years, the notion that ADD was somehow different was actually part of the DSM. It was part of the science. And then that changed again not too long ago, actually, just in 2015, when the DSM-5 came out. And the DSM is the Diagnostic Statistic Manual. That's what physicians and psychologists use for diagnosing. And when that came out, they changed it yet again. So it's still called ADHD, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. But it's no longer got the different subtypes. It's no longer defined by just attention and hyperactivity, but it's recognized that there are other issues involved, like emotionality and organization. So we're looking more at the behavioral aspects or how it shows up when we're looking to diagnose. It's a very interesting disorder because its name is misleading in a lot of ways.
I think that this gets more complicated the longer we talk about it. So let's start. No, that's okay. I'm here to learn myself, as is the listener. How does someone get tested for it today? And is there a definitive diagnosis? But I also want to ask you, given your lengthy experience in this field, what was the difference between, say, 20, 25 years ago and today?
Oh, wow. So the difference between then and now is night and day in terms of services, support, understanding, awareness, acceptability, etc. Like in those days, it was just we were sort of grasping at straws for support and information. So there's a huge amount of resources available to families today. So I'll start with that. There were a lot of questions. So I think the way that it's diagnosed, and it will be different for adults and for children. For children, it tends to be diagnosed through either a psychoeducational evaluation, which is often done with a psychologist, and that's a battery of tests to evaluate all sorts of aspects of a child's behaviors and brain functions and intelligence, etc. In some places that's considered the gold standard. Others would argue that that's still too interpretive. The challenge with ADHD is that it's not a diagnosis that's clear and direct and easy. It's really, in some ways, a diagnosis of elimination. You have to prove that it's not learning disabilities, that it's not anxiety, that it's not depression, that it's not bipolar, that it's not all these other things. There are a lot of different criteria that it requires. I think there are 9 different criteria, and if a child meets 6 out of the 9, then they would be diagnosed with ADHD. And if it interferes with significant aspects of life, but it could be in one aspect of life, it could be a problem at school but not at home, or at home but not at school.
Tell me about 6 out of the 9 markers. Just give me a hint as to what a couple of those markers might be.
It may be trouble focusing attention, sustaining attention. Maybe for a child it might be inability to sit in a seat for an extended period of time. Their markers for adults and kids are similar, but the behavior, it shows up differently. So things you would expect, but you have to have enough of them for it to hit a diagnosis.
I know from my own experience with a few of my children, the powers that be place an enormous amount of weight on getting a more definitive diagnosis in a school setting as opposed to at a home setting. And I'm wondering what some of those factors might be as well.
Well, I think that there's a sense that we can get a definitive diagnosis by evaluating what's happening in a school setting and giving teachers tools to assess a child's performance and improvements. The challenge is that the schools actually don't diagnose. So a diagnosis is going to be done by a physician, by a psychologist, in some states by potentially a social worker or a nurse practitioner. So it's not something that's going to be done generally in a school evaluation, but a school evaluation can indicate the likelihood of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
And do you think that individuals have had this affliction since the beginning of time, or do you think that it's a combination of external factors which have impacted this?
The evidence is pretty clear. It's been along for a long time. There is literature that suggests it and writes about it over 150 years ago. Dr. Ned Halliwell, who's sort of one of the leading physician experts in this field, a lot of his speeches are about the history and sort of go back significantly and tell a tale of, troubled kids and kids in orphanages and all sorts of interesting dynamics. When you look back, it's clearly been around, but I think we are just beginning to understand it in the last, 15, 20 years.
I think it would be interesting, and maybe someone already has, but if there was a book done on famous people in history who may have had ADHD, I think it would help lend some more credence, do you think?
Yeah, there's a bunch of websites that have done that. Okay. But then, then others will point and say, well, it's speculative and you don't really know, and how could you?
Sure.
But we're fairly sure that, some of the greatest geniuses in all times had ADHD, like Einstein, more than likely, and, a few others in that category. It's when you look back at their life stories, the evidence is pretty clear.
So let's start with some stats. What can you provide me with for either the demographics, race, religion, creed, ethnicity, adults versus children?
Well, so here's what we know. It does not discriminate by race or creed, or, we have kids with ADHD and adults with ADHD all over the world from all backgrounds. It does have a genetic tendency. It's about, if you see a kid with ADHD, you got about a 50% chance at least that one of that child's adult in their life, one of their parents, has ADHD. So there is definitely a genetic marker, and we're definitely talking about a difference in the brain, and the research is pretty clear now that we can see the differences that are happening in the brain. According to the CDC, most recently, we believe about 11% of kids have ADHD.
Wow.
It's the second most common childhood diagnosis these days, second only to asthma. The number is smaller for adults. It's as low as potentially 4%. There's a lot of controversy about that. It used to be believed that kids would grow out of it. And now what we understand is most times what happens is adults learn to compensate or accommodate it. So oftentimes you'll see adults who end up in careers that are really well conducive to the way that their brain is wired. So we have a lot of ER docs who have ADHD, really, really smart, creative problem solvers who like the stimulation of an ER environment where there's something constantly different to do.
Let's talk
so
a little bit.
A lot of people in the entertainment industry. So when adults with ADHD are able to find their strength and play to it, it shifts and is no longer creating the problem in their life that it was when they were trying to be a generalist and get through school.
Can you tell me a little bit more about vocations or careers which might lend themselves to someone who has this diagnosis? That's a really interesting way to look at it. So you said ER docs and creative people. Who else?
High propensity. So I often describe it to parents, when I'm talking to parents, that our kids are specialists and they're being asked in school to be generalists.
Hmm.
And so what happens is when they can specialize in something, because their brain is motivated by interest, and people with ADHD don't have a just get it done button, right? You may be able to say, I got to do this weekend, I'm going to write it on a list, I'm going to get myself to do it, I'm going to do it. A person with ADHD may need to have something to motivate her to get it done. She may need to have a reason. It's got to be interesting. It's got to be compelling. It's got to have some stimulation quality, maybe an urgency factor. There's got to be something to motivate her to do it. And so in a career, when you play to your strengths, then you're really interested in it. And you're going to be really better at it because you're interested in, and actually, you know, it's often seen as a problem with inattention, but sometimes one of the great strengths of ADHD is the ability to hyperfocus and to really hone in on something and pay full attention. So you'll see surgeons or people who really need to do detailed and very, very intensive work. It can actually be a really good career for them if they can get through the school part and figure out the organizational part. Oftentimes a doctor will have somebody running their office or somebody managing their schedule. CEOs, entrepreneurs, very high propensity of entrepreneurs have ADHD. If they do well enough to be able to hire someone to outsource the organizational challenges.
We're talking today with Elaine Taylor-Klaus about the diagnosis, symptoms, and treatment of ADHD. She is the co-founder and CEO of ImpactADHD.com. As a parent of a child with ADHD, I really cannot get into my child's head. I am just struggling all the time to try to understand her better so that we're not at odds. And truthfully, we see the world very differently. So what could you say to some of the listeners out there for whom their children or someone in their family has this, and it really creates friction in their relationships?
Yeah, I think it happens a lot. In fact, my business partner, Diane, we joke that she's executive function mom, and so she does not have ADHD, but her kids do. And I do have it, and my kids do, and so we definitely approach things very differently. And what she's really learned to do, and as you can imagine, we teach about half of our parents have ADHD themselves, and about half of them don't, right?
Yes.
So we really talk about how important it is for parents to understand what's happening in the condition, what's happening in the child, what the child's perspective is. We talk about looking at it in terms of neurological versus naughty, because we as parents have that tendency to take it personally or to be offended if our kids don't do what we ask them to do. And when we see it as naughty, we're going to respond in a certain way. And when we realize that it's a neurological challenge, that they didn't do it because they forgot or they got distracted or something else got their attention, you know, it's really got nothing to do with us. So not taking it personally is a really powerful piece. Setting realistic expectations, not based on the child you want to have, but on the child you do have, I think can be really, really a powerful tool. And, you know, we often talk to parents about, you know, getting in your child's mind. looking through the lens of your child's eyes and understanding what it might be like for them. And as you say, that can be a hard thing to do. But often, I think that one way to do it is to understand that these are kids for whom a lot is asked of them that they feel like they should be able to do, that the adults think they should be able to do, and for some reason they can't get themselves to do it. And that's incredibly frustrating and stressful. And so when we understand that they are, in many ways, just seeking some way to feel like they have some control over their lives, that if we can shift from being just being frustrated by it to really having the compassion for, wow, this is really hard. Imagine if you feel like you want to be able to do something and you know what you're supposed to do and you still can't get yourself to do it, it's just a maddening experience. And that's what these kids are dealing with all day long, getting corrected and redirected 30 times a day.
So I need you to tell me at this point that I am really a good person and a good parent, despite the fact I left 7 notes around the house that were pretty nasty, indicating that my daughter didn't pick up this, this, and this today.
Oh. So here's what I will offer you, is that you make the best decisions that you can with the information you've got, right?
Right.
And so at this point, you have a new mindset already. And so there's an opportunity to it's not that you can't leave the notes around the house, but to shift the language of the notes.
Oh, no.
Right?
Oh, no.
Or the tone of the note.
It's too late.
From, you didn't do this, to, don't forget to do this, or here's a friendly reminder. Because it's normal. It's human, right? It's frustrating to live with these kids. It's frustrating for me, and I have it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes adults with ADHD, we have the least amount of patience for those issues with our kids that we struggle with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's really, really common. So I think you got to sort of put the stick down and say, okay, here's where I am now. What is this understanding? What's the opportunity for me to reconnect with my daughter in a different way, or have a conversation different with her based on coming from a place of acknowledgement and compassion? And that's usually what I offer, is whenever there's a redirection, it's 3 steps. Acknowledge the experience that the child is having. Step 2 is to show compassion for it. And step 3 is then to offer a redirection. It's really hard for you that you're feeling antsy right now. And I know that when I had a little sister, she was bugging me too. And it's really important not to hit your sister. So what else can we do with your hands right now?
I'm a bad mommy, I'm telling you.
You're not
you.
A bad
okay,
mommy.
Sorry.
you're a real live human, right?
Again,
you are. This is the challenge.
This is a challenge, and it is my challenge, and I'm sure it's her challenge, and I hope the listener can get a slight bemusement out of this, because I'm sure they've been in the same situation.
What I will tell you is that the most important tool to use when you hit this point, you're like, I don't think I've been doing it the way I want to do it. I want to do it differently. There's one place to start, and it doesn't matter how old your child is. And you start by rebuilding the relationship, by focusing on the relationship with your child.
Oh, my. I think a
go out to lunch. Go
yes.
Get your nails done. Go to the movies. Play a game.
Yes, I think an ice cream sundae is in order.
There you go.
Yes. Must this be...
Always start there. At the core of it all is your relationship and your connection to your child.
Sure. Must this be treated with meds? And if so, which ones are most commonly used? And also, what other modalities can be utilized to help, especially a child, grapple with this?
Okay, so meds is a hot-button issue, as you know. So I'm just going to give you the facts on it. Okay, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, if we're looking at children, children age 6 and under, the number one recommended treatment is behavior therapy, which really means parent training and parent management. That's the kind of work that we do at Impact ADHD. Children 6 to 12, they recommend medication plus behavior therapy. Children 12 and over, 13 and over, they recommend medication and optional behavior therapy. And again, behavior therapy is not putting the child in therapy. It's actually teaching the parent the skills and strategies they need to manage it so that they can help the child learn to self-manage, which is the goal. So medication is recommended at this point. The evidence is only points to recommend the medication as a primary treatment along with behavior therapy.
What are some of the medications for this?
So there are 3 different classifications, if you will, of medication, and I don't want to go into too much detail because I'm not an expert or a specialist in medication, but there are three classifications. There's stimulant medication, there's non-stimulant medication, and then within stimulant, there are two different classifications. And I know it seems counterintuitive that if you've got a hyperactive kid who's bouncing off the walls that you would give him a stimulant, but if you consider that what's happening in the brain is sort of a deficiency of wiring, and so it is there. What's happening is these kids are bouncing off the walls because they're seeking stimulation. That's the best way I know to put it. They are craving input and stimulation. And so actually when you give them the stimulation, it allows them to calm down and focus. And so it sort of, and they discovered this in an orphanage with a bunch of kids, and they started calling it the kids' math pill, because they all these kids, they couldn't get through math, and they finally, all of a sudden, these kids were being successful with math, and it was sort of an accidental discovery. So for most of the people who use ADHD medication are taking one or the other form of stimulant. Some people don't respond well to the stimulant either because they have anxiety, because they have other medical issues, or just doesn't work well with their system, so there are a few meds that are non-stimulant. And there's some very good resources for medication. I would really encourage people to go to chad.org if they want more information. That's the national nonprofit for ADHD. And they have a contract with the CDC and run a website called the National Resource Center. And there's just a huge amount of information there. It's very all evidence-based, good, accurate information.
Can you overcome ADHD? Can you ever be done with having it, or does it ever lessen as you get older?
Well, so there's a lot of debate about that. There's some people who believe that kids grow out of it. I think most people in the ADHD world would probably argue that that's not the case. But as I said, adults can learn to manage it and compensate for it. Like, I wasn't diagnosed until I was 40. I had compensated really well. I had done extremely well in school. I'd gone to Wesleyan. I had managed my life pretty well, and I had taken courses of study that accommodated for myself. I didn't know I had it, but I had made a lot of really good decisions in my life to help me manage it. And it wasn't until I got the load of work and three kids that I just hit my wall, and I couldn't handle it anymore without support and without understanding it better. So I think the idea is that it's not that it goes away necessarily, although there are some people who believe it does, but that we learn we no longer are required to do some of the things that are so hard to do, or we find people that make it work for us. Like, I have a business partner who is our COO, and she runs the operations and she handles the logistics, and so she makes it possible for me to be the CEO and to look at the vision and create the curriculum, and together we create a formidable team. But if I were to try to create everything we created at Impact by myself, I don't know that I ever could have done it. I needed to connect with somebody else. And Dr. Howell said once, find someone with structure and yield to it. So I think adults find ways, successful adults anyway, find ways to compensate or manage themselves. And then there's some really good support out there. There's, particularly for adults who are diagnosed as adults, there's some work to do in sort of coming to terms with it. Therapy can be really helpful to manage the sort of a grieving of the life that you didn't have and the life that you now have. So there's a process there. There's a whole world of ADHD coaches out there that's really growing, and really there's some extraordinary coaches out there that are really supporting adults and helping them learn how to manage themselves and to manage their ADHD effectively. As with any young industry, you got to make sure that you're getting someone who is well trained and well educated and knows their stuff, because it's still a young industry. But there's some really terrific support available for adults to learn to understand what they're dealing with so that they can manage it effectively.
What other support systems would you recommend somebody try other than a support group, behavioral therapy, medication? How about neurofeedback or OTPT? Are there other support systems?
There are. The research is not as good as we might like them to be. So I wouldn't say that those are evidence-based. There's a lot of anecdotal information about them. Some people really believe that neurofeedback, biofeedback can be effective. I have found a tremendous change in my family by working with nutrition and dietary changes. That does not mean that every person out there who has ADHD should be gluten-free or dairy-free. But for some people, that toxic load, it can really shift their ability to manage themselves. Again, it doesn't make it go away, but it can lighten the load enough to be able to self-manage. For children, a lot of kids with ADHD, we do see them go into occupational therapy. Kids often have overlapping issues with sensory issues, for starters. And then a huge majority of kids with ADHD have other coexisting conditions. So they may have ADHD or learning disabilities or sensory processing disorder. So OT is a really, again, because these kids are stimulation seekers, OT can be a really good modality for support for them to help them find comfort in their bodies.
We have
And then there's this whole realm out there called brain training. You know, there's lots of people out there doing brain training. And just unfortunately, the research is just not where it's not there yet. So we don't know for sure.
We have less than a minute, and I'd like to know your final thoughts for the listener.
Oh, gosh. Final thoughts, I guess, is that these kids and these adults with ADHD have the potential to be extraordinarily successful contributing human beings. They are some of the greatest creative minds we know. And when we can believe, you know, for parents thinking about our kids, when we focus on what's possible, when we see their strengths instead of always calling out their challenges and really help them play to their strengths, what they can achieve is extraordinary.
We've been talking today with Elaine Taylor-Kloss about the diagnosis, symptoms, treatment, and more general information regarding ADHD. Elaine can be found at impactadhd.com. Thank you so much, Elaine, for this informative and highly educational half hour.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And I really need you to come home with me, too, but it's okay. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. We had a great show today. Thank you to the listener for joining us. It is our second live show. And until next time, I hope you take care.